Delusions of Grandeur. The Journey Into podcast is proud to present this journey into a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away. A journey into Star Wars. Join Marshall Latham and Rish Outfield as we explore this world of mystery and adventure, featuring many delusions of grandeur.
You rebel scum!
Scum?
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of The Delusions of Grandeur. These are coming quicker now, mostly because we're reviewing the Book of Boba Fett. And so far, we've been doing two episodes at a time. My name is Marshall Latham, here with Rish Outfield, and we're ready to talk Star Wars again.
That's what we do. How are you, Marshall?
I'm doing well. Seem to be catching up on a few things, but as soon as I say that, I'm going to get behind again.
Well, then let's keep this, we'll keep this quick so you can go on to other pressing things.
So we are covering today chapters 3 and 4 of the Book of Boba Fett, The Streets of Mos Espa and The Gathering Storm. And I believe the first one, chapter 3, was directed by Robert Rodriguez again. And the fourth chapter was directed by Kevin Tancheron. I'm not sure who that is.
He was one of the showrunners on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Oh, okay.
Oh, it says 16 episodes. I don't know what that means.
So maybe a season or something like
maybe
that.
Maybe it was just the first season.
And both of these episodes were written by Jon? By Jon Favreau. He's had all the credits on these so far. So this is his baby. Once again, we are kind of separated in the narrative by what's going on right now in Mos Espa and flashing back to the exploits of Boba Fett after he gets out of the Sarlacc pit, but before he meets up with the Mandalorian. And of course, we always do that in the back to tank or back to pod, whatever. So he's still healing from his wounds, I guess. Let's see. So I think last time we talked about the current stuff going on first, and then we talked about the flashbacks. I guess, which part of these do you enjoy more? The crime lord stuff or the flashbacks?
Well, it's hard to say. That there was so much more flashback in the first two episodes. And one episode, was it the second episode, was almost all flashback.
Yeah, it seems to be every other episode they have more flashback than modern times.
Do you think that's done then? We're not going to get any more flashbacks?
I think so, because the little robot, the last time he came out of the Bactopod, the little robot said, "You are completely healed." So I guess he's not going to be going back into the Bactopod. So hopefully that means good things are going to happen going forward here.
So it's,
I guess maybe not to bury the lead. We weren't as excited about these episodes as we were about the first two, but there's always good things to find in here. So I guess let's start going through what's going on in Mos Espa. I'm trying to remember where we leave off. I think we start out this first or chapter 3 here with 8D8 kind of explaining how things were ran under Bib Fortuna. Pretty much separated different factions. We have the Aqualish or the Walrus Men, and we have the Transdosians in another part of the city, and then Clitonians run another part of the city. So those are the big three family parts of the family here. Now, that was a question I had for you. Do you remember any Klytonians ever being in Star Wars? I've looked it up and I kind of know where they've shown up, but this is the first time I really remember seeing them in a recognizable role.
That's not ringing a bell. What are we talking about?
So, jumping forward to Chapter 4, when they're all together sitting at the table, we have the Walrus Men, and we have the Transdosians, and then we have these other aliens that kind of look like a mix between a dog and the swamp
right,
thing.
Right, but those, I knew those as Baradas. Is that not what those are? In the episode with the Scout Walker of Mandalorian, all those bandits were that species.
Oh, okay. Well, that's good. I didn't recognize that. Now, this refers to them as Klytonians.
Oh, Klaatu, okay.
From Klaatuin.
Because remember, Klaatu Barada Nikto was the...
There you go. Apparently they showed up in The Phantom Menace and Attack of the Clones. And they were in a couple Clone Wars episodes. And apparently in the High Republic books as well. But anyway, I thought that was interesting that I wasn't familiar with these aliens. So anyway, 88's kind of explaining how the power of all these different families were working in Mos Espa under Bib Fortuna. And then they're visited by a watermonger from the city of Mos Espa. And he says that people aren't respecting Boba Fett and there's chaos in the streets and there's people that have stolen water from him and he would like to have something done about it. And so Boba Fett and Fennec Shand go into town and they confront these people that have stolen from the watermonger. And they're these people who have modified their bodies with robotic parts, droid parts. And, you know, it's kind of like tattooing themselves or whatever, making themselves different. And he talks to them and they say there's no work, so they have to steal. And he invites them to work for him. And they're kind of unsure about that. But then the watermonger comes out and says, no, you have to hold them responsible. And he tells them that he needs to lower his rates and pays them off with a small amount of what he was asking or whatever. But then these mods, they get on these highly colored speeders, bike speeders, but they're more like a Vespa kind of thing. And they follow Boba Fett back to the palace or whatever to work for him in some capacity. I think we probably have a lot to say about these mods. I thought they really brought the show down. The Vespas that they were riding felt totally out of character for Star Wars things. They looked too new, too colorful, and I don't know. It just seemed strange to me that they were in this episode.
Okay, well, what you just said times three, I was in agony every moment these characters were on screen. And a part of it, it's not just, you know, people say, oh, you don't understand Star Wars. Oh, no. Like that, put a tack in that so I can talk about it later. It's not that they don't belong on Star Wars, which they don't belong on, but it's that they don't belong on Tatooine. Tatooine is out in the middle of nowhere, and it's poor and corrupt and dangerous and unimportant. If Princess Leia had had a bunch of teenage buddies on Alderaan, they could have looked like these people.
Yeah.
They could have had these brand new, insanely expensive, cost the same as a Millennium Falcon, Apple 10, top of the line things. And we would have been like, you know, that's Alderaan. And these are obviously the richest of the rich. But Tatooine is, like I said, poor. Luke grew up in poverty and everything that he had was secondhand and broken down. And we've never seen anything like that. Even in Jabba's palace, it was just jarring and it felt out of place. And maybe on Canto Bight in The Last Jedi, you could have these characters.
Or Coruscant,
and,
right?
And yeah, Coruscant was the capital, and the, you know, with insane riches, and everything is bright and flashy. The thing is, they said that they couldn't afford water, so they stole it, but they could afford these things. Now, if they had been street rats, street urchins, who are all cybernetically enhanced because they have been mutilated, because they have been abused, because it's really hard life on Tatooine. And Boba Fett takes them in and gives them the first money that they've ever had, and they blow it on these things. I think I could get behind that. But they had all this stuff when they were stealing water. It flew in the face of all that I know about Tatooine. I rip on the prequels all the time, but we never saw a Tatooine like this in episode 1 and episode 2. Even then, it was consistent visually with what we had seen in the original trilogy, and it just...
Yeah.
We keep calling them mods because they are based on the mods in London in the 1960s whose parents had come home from the war and become very wealthy, and these were bored teenagers who looked for trouble because they didn't have the kinds of troubles that previous generations had had.
Yeah, I didn't understand the reference at first, but once, you know, somebody said, yeah, it's like the mods from London, you know, I'm like, oh, okay, yeah, I know about that. But it just, like you said, it doesn't fit at all. They're not wearing rags. They're not, you know, dirty. They're wearing these, you know, super clean, state-of-the-art clothes. One of the guys looks like Harry Potter. You know, they just look like you said. They're rich. They have all these things. And I try not to, you know, hate on things. I try to be positive about the things. Even if I don't like them, I said, well, you know, that's fine. Somebody else might like those things. But I don't know. Like you were saying, every time they were on the screen, it was like, ugh, go away. Don't come back. And I like the fact that they weren't in Chapter 4. They were only in Chapter 3. But I'm sure we'll see them again in the series.
Yeah, absolutely. And it would have been nice if we had lost a few of them in Episode 3, because there's the big chase at the end involving them. But no, they played it really safe, and they all went under the speed limit, and it just ensured that none of them would get hurt. And yeah, I'll stop talking about this, because I know you don't like to be negative. But the last time that I felt this repulsed by something was that droid in Solo. That just, like, ruined every scene that she was in for me. And I couldn't get my head around...
L3, right?
The out-of-placeness. I know there's a word for that, but the out-of-placeness of that character. And in this, like, the leader of the mods is this really pretty CW teenage girl, and she should be rocking a mic with a band like Paramore. She should not be in Star Wars.
That's a good one, yeah. Yeah, Sophie Thatcher is her name, and her character's name is Drash.
Well, anyhow, they actually were a very small part of the series, Book of Boba Fett, but it has been really interesting to hear other people have the same reaction that I did.
Yeah.
And that's nice, because sometimes I feel like I'm the only one that liked something or really didn't like something. Well, at least a lot of us are on the same page. The flashbacks in that episode were fine, but I guess we haven't gotten to those.
But it was pretty brief flashbacks in this episode. I think all that happens in the flashback is, well, I mean, it's very dramatic, but he leaves the Tusken Raiders to go into Mos Espa and talk to the Pikes, and he's riding a Bantha, and he leaves, and everybody's watching him go, and he goes and talks to the Pike, and he says, hey, you know, you owe me money for going through the Dune Sea. Like, we worked the deal we worked out last time. And the Pike leader says, yes, we want to honor that deal, but we can't pay protection money to two different people. I don't know, the Sand Drifters or something he called them. But it's this, the speeder bike gang that we've seen previously are supposedly getting money from them as well. And so Boba says, I'll take care of it. And he leaves without getting his money. And he goes back to the Tusken camp. But as he's arriving, he sees smoke over the horizon. And he, you know, gets off the Banth and runs into the camp. And all of the Tuskens are dead. The tribe is dead. Or all the Tuskens in the tribe have been killed. And the tents have been burned. And he walks through, and the little symbol that the biker gang has left in other places where they are is on one of the tents. And so he knows who's responsible for killing his tribe. And so he builds a funeral pyre and burns them all and their gaffy sticks and everything. And then it shows him get back on his Bantha and ride off. And that's all we have in this episode for a flashback, which it's very impactful for his story and what happened to him. But my taste on this show has been, I've enjoyed the flashbacks a lot more than I've enjoyed the crime boss stuff that's going on.
Well, they'd given us reason to care about the Sand People and about Boba Fett when he was an underdog. I didn't get that they were all dead because I didn't see the body of the child, and I didn't know for sure that the leader and the female one that he had had such a bond with were dead. They didn't have like a solemn close-up of one of those bodies. And so I was kind of holding out hope that in the next episode we'd find out that they'd been taken prisoner by the biker gang, or that they were in hiding, you know, that these characters would show up again. But because they don't, I guess they were all dead.
Yeah, and the only indication that I saw that they were dead, you're right, we didn't see a close-up of them, their bodies laying on the ground, at least as far as I could tell. But he does put the different gaffy sticks, I kind of recognize one of them as the woman's gaffy stick, and then he pulls this little wooden gaffy stick out and places that on. So I assumed that was the little Tusken kid.
Okay.
That was his gaffy stick that he used. So that was the only indication that I saw that they had died. But I kind of wanted to see what happened after that, but I had to wait till the next episode to kind of see what happened after that. So yes, and then we get to the part where he's having these flashbacks while he's in the Bactopod, and he is rudely awakened from his flashback because somebody opens the Bactopod before he's done and rips him out of there. And it's our good old friend, the Wookiee, Kersantan.
It's always hard for me to remember his name. A lot of times I say the Black Wookiee. But it's Black Kersantan? Am I saying it right?
That's what they called him in the comic books, but I've noticed in the show that they don't. They just use Kersantan in the show. So I don't know if it's like in Marvel Comics where they had Black Goliath or whatever, and then they eventually just called him Goliath or something like that.
Okay, so yeah, he's there to assassinate Boba Fett, is my assumption. Because he just grabs him and throws him across the room. And
Boba's at a big disadvantage because he's, half naked or mostly naked and just coming out of his treatment. So he tries to go over to, where his armor is and get a gun or something that he can use against Kersantan. But Kersantan has these steel knuckles, but they have a charge on them. And so he's... starts, hitting him with those brass knuckles. That's what I was thinking of. But he's also just super strong, right? I mean, he's a Wookiee, but he's pretty built as well. And so, yeah, every time Boba tries to do something, he gets thrown across the room again. And eventually, Kersantan picks him up, and he's got him in a bear hug, and it's like he's just going to break his back. And then our fearless mods come in. And start attacking Kersantan and gives Boba a little bit of a break, but they try, but they don't do very well against Kersantan either.
Yeah, I think at some point Fennec Shand comes in too, and it's all of them against the Wookiee.
And the Gamorrean guards, too.
That's right. The two Gamorrean guards come in, and Chrysantin bites one of them, like, on the neck.
Right. And they end up, you know, falling down into the throne room instead of the little Bactopod area. And Boba's not there, but the, you know, the mods and the Gamorrean guards are there. And then Fennec Shand shows up and tells them to move back and hits the little trap door. And Kersantan starts to go down into the Rancor pit, the Rancorless Rancor pit. And but he does catch on to the edge of it, so he hasn't quite fallen yet. And then I think Fennec Shand gets a knife or something and throws it and hits his hand, and he does drop down into the Rancor pit. I don't know, man. I was a little disappointed in the Gamorrean guards. They got taken out pretty quick, and I kind of expected the mods not to do too well, but I thought the Gamorrean guards would put up a bigger fight.
See, I was not very impressed with that fight at all. Granted, we had only had a week of build-up about the character of Chrysantin, but in that week, I was just like, oh, this is going to be such an epic fight, and all this, it's going to be really, really great. I can't imagine how cool this guy will be, and he was unable to kill a naked, wet man.
Right.
Of course, I didn't want Boba Fett to die, but it just, it was made in a way that he seemed ineffectual. If Boba Fett had 3 seconds of fighting this guy before the reinforcements came and saved his hide, I would have been happier about it.
Yeah.
It's not that they made Chrysantin seem not tough, because they like hit him in the back with the gaffy stick and like hit him in the hand with a throwing star and are just like pounding him and zapping him and stuff. I think it's just the fight was over really, really quickly and nobody got seriously hurt. And that was a problem for me. And I don't want it to be rated R or anything like that or super gory, but it's just, it was made by Robert Rodriguez. And yet the two action sequences in this episode felt like it was a kid's show. And well, I guess my problem is that there were no consequences,
right,
to the two action sequences. Whereas in the first two episodes, people did die.
Yeah.
When there was a fight scene or an action scene.
Yeah, I think the biggest consequence was one of the Gamorrean guards had to go into the Bactopod. He said, take him to my Bactopod.
That was nice that he would do that. That's not something you would expect Jabba to have done. And I think they're showing that he's a much more conscientious, moral man.
Yeah.
Than Fortuna was, or these other crime lords, or Jabba the Hutt. Unfortunately, this moral man has the name Boba Fett, and so it's hard for me to get my head around that, too.
Well, that's a lot of people have talked about that. I don't think we hit it too much in the last episode where we talked about this, but, you know, when we saw Boba Fett in The Mandalorian, he was unbeatable. You know, he was taking 5 stormtroopers out or whatever, just with him and his gaffy stick. And it seems like in these episodes, he's just being beat all the time. And it seems like he should be a lot tougher. I don't know why they've decided to make him a less formidable character than he's been all the time that we've known him. But it's just kind of strange. Do you feel that way too? That he's weaker than he was when he was in The Mandalorian?
Well, I mean, he definitely was in all the flashback scenes where he's just being thrashed by everybody from Sand People to Jawas. But that was, I feel like, so that we would sympathize with him, so that we would root for him, so that he would be an underdog and we would see him rise. He would have an arc on the show. My problem is just that he's less ruthless and less brilliant and less deadly than the Boba Fett that I knew from my childhood. And granted, they've tossed out like all the comics and all the expanded universe books and the adventures that we've had with Boba Fett over the years. So it's just episode 2, I guess, and the Clone Wars, which I haven't seen, and then Empire and Jedi. But I liked the idea that he was the most feared bounty hunter in all the galaxy.
Right.
They've defanged him, and I feel like they did that intentionally so that he wouldn't be a very unlikable protagonist. But I wanted an unlikable protagonist. We had Din Djarin, who's just a super decent religious guy. I mean, you know what I mean by religious guy. You know, he's part of a...
Yeah.
He's part of some kind of faith that has a code that he will not break. And he spares this child in the very, very first episode and then puts his life on the line to save the child over and over and over again. He is a good man, and I didn't feel like they needed to do that with Boba Fett, but he's just Din Djarin light. And so having the flashbacks and then the modern stuff in every single episode hurts the show in a way.
It does.
Because it would have been nice if he had started out as just a bad guy. That you're like, gosh, you know, it's a good thing Han Solo killed this. Well, he didn't. And then to have him have a change of heart, because he suffers so much and, you know, learns to get along with people in this tribe. But because of the flashback thing, there doesn't seem to be that big of a difference between flashback Boba and modern times Boba. And he's wise and almost a pacifist, you know? Fennec Shand has a rougher edge than Boba Fett does.
Yeah, she does.
And, you know, moments where she says, you know, if you had spoken to Jabba in this way, he would have fed you to his menagerie. And 8D8 says, you know, we need to torture them and, you know, we need to murder these people. And Boba Fett's like, no, I'm going to get respect. Maybe if that had come in like the fifth episode, because it was told in a chronological fashion, it would have felt more natural. But at this point, I want Boba Fett to go full Michael Corleone and kill everybody and just be like, you know what? I tried. I had this nice dinner with all these guys and I went to the pikes and spoke to them man to man or man to fish and they stabbed me in the back. Well, now I get to stab myself and just wipe them out. I want to see that. And maybe that's not good for kids to see that kind of thing, but there feels like an organized crime element to the show, to an underworld, but it doesn't have any of the immorality. It doesn't have any of the sleaze. It doesn't have any of the realism, I guess, of that kind of story.
Yeah.
Where it's like the only way to beat these bad people is to be worse than these bad people. And that also, again, feels like a choice that they made from the get-go, where they said, this is who Boba Fett is going to be in this show. And it doesn't help that Temuera Morrison seems like a good man as an actor. You know, he has like a dignity to him and a quietness to him, even in episode 2, where I guess we were supposed to hate him because he's Obi-Wan's enemy or whatever, but I never felt like he was particularly underhanded or evil. This is Jango Fett, I guess we're talking about here.
Yeah, yeah.
And it may just be something that the actor brings to the part, you know, a quiet decency. But it's not what I want.
I'm with you. I've kind of been hoping, and I don't know if we're going to get it, but I was kind of hoping that we'd get to the point, you know, he's a changed man after the Sarlacc pit and, you know, meeting up with these Tusken Raiders and learning their ways. He's become a peaceful man and, you know, wants to get along and be a tribe. But then at some point, something happens, you know, somebody is killed or, you know, something happens where he just loses it. And I kind of wanted it to be like Unforgiven. You know, with the Clint Eastwood movie, where he's kind of an old man and he's seen the error of his young ways and he's killed a lot of men and he's not, doesn't feel too proud of that or whatever. And then at the end of the movie, when his friend gets killed, spoilers, sorry.
Spoilers of a 30-year-old movie.
Right. You know, he says, that's it. You know, I'm going to take you out. And so, you know, he goes back. And, you know, does the whole revenge thing or whatever and takes him out like the old Clint Eastwood that we knew, you know. So that could still happen in this series, but it seems like they're building up to something different than that. I guess another thought that I had with this was, I swear at some point when they introduced the Book of Boba Fett or they talked about it, that there was only 4 episodes on the books.
Right. And now I think there are 7.
Right. And I'm kind of jumping ahead a little bit, but, you know, at the end of the Gathering Storm, it seems like it's building to this final battle for Tatooine or Mos Espa or whatever between the Pikes and Boba Fett. And he wants to get more people to help him. And so it's building to so that the last three episodes, I think, will be this final battle and all the different things that happen with that. And so if you think about that, the Gathering Storm and these last three episodes could have been that whole four episode arc of what's going on. But then they probably came up with, well, we want to explain what happened after the Sarlacc pit and how did he get to this point? How did he come back? And so they kind of built that backstory. And then to fill in, they've done these other little things in these four episodes on Mos Espa before the big battle at the end. I don't know. It just seems like the pacing of this is really strange. And it almost needed to be two different seasons.
Huh.
Or something like that. I don't know. That's the theory that I had after I watched Chapter 4. Is that I think they added on because they wanted to tell more of a story. And so a lot of this stuff on Mos Espa has just kind of been filler so that we could get the backstory. And then we go to the action of the conflict.
Yeah, you know, that's a fair assessment. I mean, how many times have they gone to Jennifer Beals' nightclub? Three times, I think.
Yeah.
And it just... And
they've gone to the mayor's office twice. You know?
It feels very repetitious and a little bit like they are treading water. And so, yeah, that seems to be the case. Very, very briefly, so the Hutts come to Jabba's palace and they're outside the gates and the gates open up and Boba Fett and Fennec Shand go out there and they've got the Wookiee in chains. They did not kill him. And the twins, the two Hutts, I think they actually apologize for sending the Wookiee to kill.
Yeah, they do.
Boba Fett. But do they have an excuse?
No, not really. Just that they, you know, at that time they were trying to take over Tatooine again for the Hutts. And so they wanted him out of the way. But
I think they say that they are abandoning Tatooine and that Fett is welcome to it, but there is the Pike organization that he's going to have to deal with. And they don't want to deal with the Pikes. And so they're leaving Tatooine in his hands. And as a peace offering, they present a young Rancor to go in his pit, I guess.
Yeah.
And Boba Fett is magnanimous. He releases Black Chrysantin. Did I say it right?
Yep, that's it. Yep.
He frees him and says to him, just like, go your way, man. Better luck next time.
Oh, yeah. And then he says, don't work for scug holes.
Okay.
I thought that was a pretty funny line. But yeah, he lets him go free. And then he's really excited about this Rancor. And with the Rancor, we have Danny Trejo as the Rancor keeper as well. Yeah.
Trejo is in everything that Rodriguez does, pretty much. They go back many, many years, and I like Danny Trejo a lot. I've met him a few times, and we actually...
Oh, have you?
We worked on an episode of X-Files where I was an extra, and then he was the star of this movie that I was one of the screenwriters of that never came out.
Oh, man.
But I got to hang out with him and... watch him shoot a shotgun in a dark alley, and it was just deafening, and that was really neat. And yeah, Trejo is a scary-looking dude. He always has been, but he's a very soft-spoken, friendly guy in person, and he's very soft-spoken in this, too, and he's affectionate toward this young Rancor, and he says, you know, oh, Rancors bond with the first human they see, I think he says, and they're very affectionate creatures if you treat them right.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
And Boba Fett really likes this Rancor. You can tell there's like an instant connection between the two of them.
Yeah, he's excited about it. Yeah.
And I'm assuming he puts it down in the
and
what do you call that? The pit there. And oh, we know he does because we see it's we hear it roar underneath, huh? Later.
During the dinner. And so, yeah, he says, I want to ride this thing.
Oh, good point. Yeah, that's a setup that we're going to get paid off in episode, what, 6? Very end of episode 6, is that when you do it? Or do you wait until episode 7?
I'm thinking episode 7.
All right.
He, like, has disappeared or whatever, and then all of a sudden he comes and he's riding the Rancor. Did you notice there was a reference to courtship of Princess Leia in this as well. Did you catch that?
Well, I didn't, but I heard him say something about like the witches of Dathomar. And so I had to look that up. I didn't know what that was. I knew that there was a Sith witch on the Clone Wars cartoon.
Yeah.
And that's what I thought it was a reference to.
Yeah, the Night Sisters in Clone Wars, and they're on Dathomir. But they didn't call them the Night Sisters, but the witches of Dathomir were in... The Courtship of Princess Leia, which is a expanded universe novel. One of the first ones out there, written by, was it David Farland or did he go by David Wolverton?
It was Dave Wolverton is his sci-fi name.
Okay. Who recently passed, as you know.
Yeah. And I never did read Courtship of Princess Leia, but I remember it being in every bookstore and you couldn't get away from that cover.
I did remember that, that's right. There were Rancors in that book. So I might have to reread that. It's been a long time, but I remember there were some interesting elements of that as well. But anyway, I thought that was kind of fun.
Yeah, if you reread it, let's talk about it. And we can talk a little bit about Wolverton. He used to come to every single one of those writers' conferences that I always go to in February. And so I got to talk to him several times.
Yeah, we could do that as an episode. We could both read it and talk about it. Let's see. So what else happens in this chapter 3 episode? I guess they decide to go talk to the mayor because he says he has to do something, you know, to prove himself or whatever. And so they seek an audience with the mayor, but the mayor says, oh, he's not going to be available for months, you know, to be able to. So they just say, well, we're going to go see him anyway. And so they go to the mayor's office and... The major domo is there as usual, and he's making excuses saying that, oh, no, he's not available for anything. And Fennec Shand says, well, if you want to continue to live, we're going to see him now. And so the major domo says, oh, well, I think I can arrange that. And so he goes into the mayor's room, but then the door locks behind him and they know something's up. And so they break into the mayor's office and there's nobody there. And then the major domo tries to get away in a speeder, but the mods have come with Boba Fett. And so they take off in their speeders. And I don't know if this happened to you during this speeder chase, but something happened on Disney Plus and the whole show just kind of slowed down for my viewing of it. I don't know if that happened to you or not.
Oh, well, I have heard a bunch of people complain about how slow the chase was. There was a scene from Seinfeld that I saw somebody refer to where George Costanza is on one of those little electric scooters that old people have or that you have at like Walmart.
Yeah, I remember that. Yeah.
And a whole bunch of them are after him and they're going about 4 miles an hour down the road after one another. But I had assumed it was just because of how it had been edited and filmed rather than how it played back on the TV, but...
Yeah, no, I was joking.
Oh, geez. Well, shoot, I should I should rephrase. I didn't pick up that it was a joke.
I mean, it did seem just not that exciting. And maybe it's just because I didn't care about the scooters. There's all these shots where, you know, they have to avoid something, so they go up on the wall on their speeder and then go around the obstacle or whatever, and I think that was supposed to be cool, but it didn't track with me. Like we've already talked about, everything with these characters is just not as enjoyable to watch.
Yeah, well, a lot of it was played for laughs. There were a bunch of droid hijinks during the chase.
Oh, right.
And there was just no...
There was like a painting of Jabba.
Yeah, that's right. There was a droid pulling a rickshaw like Anakin and Padme rode around in episode 2.
That's right.
And he gets out of the way so that the speeder will hit the passengers instead of him. But it had no danger to it if these Vespas had been just beaten up and scratched and dented and that one blew up and stuff. That would be something. But the only consequences was that the speeder that the Majordomo is driving crashes into some fruit and it comes tumbling down like the manure truck in Back to the Future. And a bunch of people were just exactly. like, oh, that's great. That's a Back to the Future reference. But I was just horrified by how stupid it all was that I couldn't appreciate a Back to the Future reference. Sir, that's quite an accomplishment.
Yeah, it was cartoonish, almost.
It really, really was. It made me feel like this is for children. Whereas The Bad Batch, which was animated, didn't feel that dumbed down to me. the Majordomo crashes and the fruit comes tumbling down and he goes, oh, and you expected to hear womp womp. But they're not going to hurt him. They're not going to torture him. They're not going to throw him to the Rancor or any of that stuff. There are no consequences to this. And it's too bad. And I guess he tells Boba Fett that the mayor is in league with the Pike Syndicate. Is that right? Or did he already say that?
He says, yeah, he's with the Pikes. And he just kind of gives up all the information at that point. But I was just thinking as you were talking about that, what this really feels like to me. It feels like an episode of Droids, the old Saturday morning cartoon.
Oh, okay.
These mods could be perfect characters in that show. And just the stakes of it just felt like an episode of Droids rather than something that we're used to seeing, like The Mandalorian kind of thing.
Well, I think that is that episode. And that was the worst of the four episodes for me. I enjoyed almost none of it. A lot of people really liked the second episode. And then the fourth episode, a lot of people really liked. And the interesting thing is Rodriguez directed the first and the third, but he didn't direct the second or the fourth.
Oh, wow. That's true.
And I don't know if that is what is to blame, because Rodriguez is a really fine filmmaker. As I've said before, he makes these movies that are really, really cheap, and you would never know they were cheap because he is economical. He will be his own cinematographer. He knows exactly what he wants. He doesn't shoot extra stuff that he doesn't need. But for some reason, he was in over his head on these two episodes because they were definitely the weaker of the four. But especially this third one, and I guess we've talked for an hour about it. Let's it's only been 40 minutes. Never mind. But the fourth episode, spoiler alert. I should have set this as a New Year's resolution to not ever say spoiler alert again because it's stupid. I fell asleep early on in chapter 4 in the Gathering Storm. I fell asleep when they were looking at Slave One in a hangar or something like that. And then I woke up at the end when that was the banquet. So I missed all of that. And when my cousin was talking to me about it the next day, he was describing scenes that I didn't remember. And so I had to watch it again. And I sat down and watched the whole thing so that I wouldn't be lost when you and I talk.
Oh, good.
But the show premieres so early in the morning that a lot of times I am pretty wiped out. I can't imagine what it would be like to just watch Book of Boba Fett, you know, in the afternoon or something. But this episode also, I believe, starts in the Bacta tank. And this is, help me out, is he riding on the Bantha and he sees a flash of light and he goes to investigate and he finds Fennec Shand, who has been shot by the Mandalorian?
It wasn't the Mandalorian, it was the kid bounty hunter that was trying to make a name for himself.
Oh, okay.
But it was the first season of Mandalorian. Before that, he is scoping out Jabba's palace, trying to find out, you know, how we can get Slave One. But there's too many guards. And then I think he sees the flash of light and goes and investigates and finds Fennec Shand near death.
Well, who is it that he is talking to then when he sees that? Who is it that he says there are too many guards to?
I think he's talking to his Bantha at that point.
Okay. That's cool. He's talking to the Bantha. Very well done, the way they've done the Bantha. It really does look like it's alive.
It does,
Did we ever figure out how they're doing it? whether it is just a costume or a puppet.
No, I just heard that they had the one Bantha and it rides on a track and it kind of has that motion to it as it's on the track. But
okay.
I mean, it's not just on the track. It's sitting next to him, you know, when he's eating food and it wags its tail because it wants to eat the food or whatever. And he gives him the meat and it chews the meat. And yeah, I really like the Bantha in this, the way they do it. And at one point it's licking him and stuff like that. So
yeah, it's a combination between a horse and a dog.
Yeah.
But it really does feel like a Western where a cowboy is talking to his horse.
Yes. Yeah.
And then we have the scene that Big referred to as the Rick James scene.
Oh, that's funny.
Right? So he finds Fennec Shand's body and he carries it to this, I think they call it a mod shop.
A mod parlor, they call it.
Mod parlor, okay. But it's got a bunch of people outside that have like glowing eyes and cybernetic bits to them.
Right.
And he comes in and it's got this guy with blonde dreadlocks, I think, or yellow dreadlocks.
Yep.
And he's part of a band, and I wasn't familiar with his music. But his own music is playing in the shop, and he says, "Oh, aren't you a little old to be coming in here?" And again, it's like I wanted him to just start wiping the walls with these people. He says, "You know, this woman is dying. She's been shot in the stomach. I need modification immediately." And he says, "Like, you know, you have to wait your turn, or you know, we don't want your kind here, or whatever." And I wanted him to like break people's fingers and stuff and say, "Okay, I didn't quite hear what you said. I couldn't hear you over the screaming. What was it you said about the woman?" I guess what he does is he just throws a bag of money on the table, and sure enough, they're able to fix Fennec Shand.
Right.
And he says, "Aren't you going to cover up her stomach where I guess he's done these modifications and you can see tubes and wires and stuff?" And the guy says, "Well, I wouldn't want to cover up such artistry or something like that."
Right. This beautiful machinery or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the modifier is played by Thundercat. That's the guy's name.
Oh, no wonder Big liked him so much.
Hey-o!
Are you familiar with Thundercat?
I'm not. Somebody said he was in a version of Suicidal Tendencies, but I don't think he was a member of the band when I knew them as a band. So,
no, he couldn't be, because when you and I knew Suicidal Tendencies, he would be a fetus.
Yeah, so basically Fennec Shand is repaired. I thought that was a weird scene too, because like she didn't have... I mean, I don't know if we've ever seen this in Star Wars, but, you know, it wasn't like she was on oxygen or like any care for her to stay alive. He just started digging into her guts, you know, and replacing it with machinery. You'd think there'd be something to keep her alive during that process or whatever, but that was kind of strange. He takes her back. Boba takes her back to where the camp is, or maybe it was a different camp. And she wakes up and realizes, you know, what's happened to her. It's kind of a little body horror thing, you know. She realizes she's, you know, her stomach is a machine now. And he introduces himself as Boba Fett. And she's like, "Boba Fett is dead." He's like, "I was once left on the sands of Tatooine like you were, but
can you say it the same way that he does? Where he goes, "Left for dead on the sands of Tatooine." I guess not.
No, I don't do a very good Boba Fett, but...
No, I don't either. He's no good to me, Dad.
Well, I guess I could say, "I am Boba Fett," because he says that quite a bit. But so anyway, he kind of tells her his plan. He says, "You know, I'm tired of being a bounty hunter. I'm tired of fighting for idiots that could solve problems." And he feels like he could do a better job than the people he's worked for. And in all of his conversations, he still doesn't sell me on, you know, what he really wants. Or I don't care about what he really wants when he's explaining it to people. Anyway, he kind of forms a bond with her, and he wants her to help him get his ship back. And she says that she'll help him with that, but then her debt will be paid and she'll go on her way. And so, yeah, then they go on to this heist scene or whatever, where they go into the palace and steal away Slave One. And one of the things I thought was pretty cool was it's a device that I used in a Star Wars story that I wrote that I still haven't gotten out on the podcast, but she has this little remote droid, this little sphere that goes into the palace and sneaks in and pretty much scans everything and finds out where all the guards are. And it comes back and they look it over and kind of plan out what they're going to do. So they sneak into the palace, and I don't know why they go up the stairs or whatever, but they end up going into this kitchen and there's droids there preparing the meal. And one of them is EV-99. So I guess he's been repurposed as a kitchen droid instead of a, what was he, a droid boss in Return of the Jedi?
That's right, yeah, the overseer. EV-99 is a girl, by the way.
Oh, it's a girl, I'm sorry. I shouldn't have assumed its gender.
And yeah, the other one is like this chef bot with a bunch of arms with like knives and meat cleavers on it and stuff.
Yeah, that was kind of a neat little droid.
They assume that there's a rat, I think, because they hear the little ball, right? Or do they hear Boba Fett or something like that? And a rat catcher droid comes in, yeah, with like a net.
Yeah.
And it's just a ridiculously cutesy little droid that I'm sure that, well, I was going to say, I'm sure they'll make a toy of. But boy, Hasbro has been so lax on these toys. Maybe they won't.
Yeah.
In another day, they would have totally made a toy of this. And they would have made a toy of the floating little probe that I think there is the technology to make like floating drone type things now.
Oh, yeah.
And it would just be really neat to have a silver and red replica of this thing. But their wills are broken.
Yeah, I can't remember what they're called. But the little droids with the like the rabbit ears or whatever on them, they show up quite a bit in Clone Wars, but I've never seen it live action. So this was the first time we've seen it in live action. So yeah, they have to, for the droids not to set the alarm or alert other people to their presence, they have to take out the droids. And it's kind of neat that, I mean, EV-99 is taken out pretty easily. But then the little chef droid with the knives kind of poses and does a little General Grievous thing where it swings all the knives at one point. But then Fennec Shan just appears behind it and cuts its neck off or whatever. And so it's down. And then they have to catch the little rat catcher droid thing.
The rat catcher droid has an off switch and it switches itself off.
You're right. You know, it's definitely played for comedy. Because he's trying to chase this little droid and it's going all over the place and he's making a mess of the place. And it's but it works a lot better to me than the speeder chase did in the... It doesn't feel as slapsticky and it's not that long and drawn out. And then they make their way down to the hangar and they have to fight off a bunch of Gamorrean guards and Nikto guards. And there's a gunfight, laser gunfight. I thought that was really fun, that whole scene where they're trying to get the Slave One out of the hangar. And Boba goes into the ship and tries to help with guns and get it running. I don't know how long it's been sitting there, if it's been not used for 5 years or whatever it is. Again, it's kind of hard to know the timeline of things. You know, how long was Boba with the Tuskens, because...
I think it is 5 years, though, because Mandalorian took place 5 years after Return of the Jedi, and the ship would have just been sitting there. This is concurrent with season one of Mandalorian, I think, because he found Fennec Shand.
Right.
That's weird. I wonder what Bib Fortuna has been doing, and it would have been kind of neat to see him.
Yeah, I mean...
Maybe we don't need to see... What has become of Bib Fortuna?
We don't want another spinoff show for Bib Fortuna.
Well, I was just saying, you know, if he had been like giving orders and alarms are going off and that, you know, sending guards
Yeah, in this sequence, yeah, it would have been kind of neat to see Bib. Yeah. But yeah, so eventually they are able to get out and escape with Slave One. I noticed they didn't call it Slave One.
Yeah, they they've removed that name from the merchandise as well. So it's, I guess it's called Boba Fett's Fire Spray or Boba Fett's ship now.
Yeah.
It doesn't bother me as much as some of the other things that, you know, I'll pick my battles. They never called it Slave One in any of the movies. And so I'm okay if he calls it Fire Spray.
Yeah. Which I don't think he called it the Fire Spray or my Fire Spray.
I think that's the kind of ship that it is, right?
Right. I mean, it's probably wise. I mean, that's got a lot of bad connotations to it. But I'll always think of it as Slave One. I mean, that's the ship. So.
Yeah, we all will.
Yeah. So the first thing that he does is he goes and finds the biker gang and just wipes them out with the fire spray. Just shoots them down with lasers. And
yeah, this scene was a little bit more of what I wanted from Boba Fett. Is just, yeah, he didn't leave a single one alive.
And, yeah.
And they had it coming. So there's that.
Yeah, they were never made out to be sympathetic or anything. So, yeah, I agree. I mean, that's kind of the Boba Fett we kind of expected through the whole show. Do you want to go into the Sarlacc part?
Yeah, he wants to get his armor back, and he assumes that it's down in the belly of the Sarlacc, right? And at this point, has Fennec Shand say that she'll hang out with him, that she'll stay by his side, or is this just... Because
yeah, kind of unofficially, you know, she says, I'll go along for the ride.
No, that's right. This scene was interesting because it was kind of quiet and slow, and, you know, I waited for something to jump out. Because it's just the big pit with teeth in the desert and there's no beak. Does he go spelunking down there after he's killed it, or
after he's killed it? Yeah, first of all, he just goes up to it with the Slave One and tries to look down and see if he can see the armor.
And yeah, you get a really cool jump scare where the beak just jumps out at them, and it's trying to get at Fennec Shand. I think it's the tentacles are grabbing hold of the ship and pulling it into the mouth.
Yep.
That was really impressive, actually, because this thing is strong enough to keep their ship from escaping. They've got the engines going, and it can't pull away.
And he tries to shoot it with his lasers, but it's positioned wrong, so it's just blasting into the sand instead of the Sarlacc. And so eventually Fennec Shand reaches up, or she has to unbuckle herself because she can't reach it, and climb up and drops one of the sonic bombs into the mouth of the Sarlacc, and then it goes off with its brang.
Do you like the brang noise?
I love that. Yeah, that was one of my favorite things from episode 2.
And yeah, I think that totally roasts the Sarlacc.
Yeah, and then he gets out and he gets a rope and goes splunking down to find the armor. So my guess is he doesn't remember the Jawas when he was just got out of the Sarlacc and was laying there in the sand. He must not have remembered that they showed up and took off his armor.
But the armor is not down there.
Yeah, you know, it'll probably be good for the pacing of the show if we're done with the flashbacks. But I do kind of want to see where he first... Does he see the Marshal?
Your Marshal wears Mandalorian armor.
With the armor before Mando shows up? Or does he just see the Mandalorian on the speeder with his armor? You know, that'd be kind of interesting.
Well, are there other adventures? Are there other stories to be told between him, you know, saving Fennec Shand and then showing up in season 2 of Mandalorian?
I mean, there could be, but I don't know if they're going to give us any more. Like I say, I've enjoyed the flashbacks more than I have the other show, but maybe that's just because it's been the filler, like we were talking about. But they seem to be building up to something for these last 3 episodes that will be the showdown with the Pikes or whatever.
I don't understand, though, how there can be 3 more episodes. It feels like there should be one more.
Yeah, it really does.
The big confrontation. So there's got to be some new development, some monkey wrench that gets thrown in. You know, it could be that there's a mission that he has to go on in the next episode to get Din Djarin to help him.
Oh, could be.
Like, if you'll help me with this, I'll help you with your problem. I'm not sure. It feels like the episode before the last episode.
Yeah.
Like you said, he gets out of the back to tank and the droid says, "You are healed. So no further flashbacks are necessary." And they go to the sanctuary nightclub, and we get this scene where Chrysantin is sitting and he's sort of glowering at these Trandoshans who are gambling, and he gets up and just starts beating them up, and he wants to kill one of them.
Oh, right.
And it's just because Wookiees hate Trandoshans, right? Or did I miss something?
Yeah, so if you've only watched the movies and stuff, they don't talk about it, but kind of the thing in the expanded universe is that Trandoshans and Wookiees are enemies of each other, that the Trandoshans are the ones that captured the Wookiees, and it was part of the slave trade, that they're the ones that sold them off to the Pikes or whoever, you know. And so there's this enmity and this, you know, hatred between the two species. But I've only seen that in the, you know, tales from Mos Eisley Cantina or tales from Jabba's Palace or these newer From a Certain Point of View books, in short stories, that there's this hatred between the two species. So I had to explain that to my wife after we watched the show. I said, you know, he wasn't just grumpy. He, you know, there's this kind of history between the two species. So she's like, oh, okay. I didn't quite catch that or understand what was going on.
Well, I got to side with your wife, man. Because they paint Chrysantin as just this surly, drunk brute.
Yeah, they do.
And the bartender comes over and it's like, hey, you've made your point. You've rung up quite a bar tab, but if you'll let this gentleman go back to his fun, then I'll consider it even. And he's like, no, I want to rip his arm off anyway. And sorry. It's a character that for 1 week I thought was the coolest thing since sliced bread. And now it's like, nah, I don't need a figure of this guy because he's just a dumb bully. But that's just me. I'm sure he'll have moments to shine later. But, you know, I really like Bossk, and so maybe, you know, one of these guys was Bossk's cousin, and so I took it personally.
Yeah, I'm kind of disappointed that the Trandoshans aren't being represented very well in these episodes either. I mean, they're these tough dudes, right? I mean, maybe it's just Bossk and a few other ones that are tough, but they come off pretty weak in this episode. And
yeah, they look cool, and that's it. Which I guess is the case with Bossk in Empire Strikes Back, but
yeah,
if he were to show up in an episode, I would expect him to be, you know, much more formidable than the other.
Yeah, ruthless and yeah.
Anyhow, Boba Fett offers Chrysantin a job, and I'm assuming Chrysantin says yes.
Yeah, he shows up at the dinner scene. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so basically, Boba invites all of these aliens that are the crime bosses around the area. There's the Walrus Men and the Trandoshans and these new Clatonians or whatever. And he explains that the Pikes are taking over and they're going to ruin everything they have going in Mos Espa. And initially, I think he's trying to get them to help them and fight, but they kind of show that they're not willing to. And so he says, well, I'll take care of them by myself. I just ask that you stay neutral if the Pikes ask you to help against me. And so they all agree to this, and then they leave. I think Fennec asks him, do you trust them? He says, well, I trust that they'll serve their own self-interest. And so hopefully, you know, these guys will, maybe they won't be allies, but at least they'll be out of the fight or whatever. And then he says, but we need more muscle. And she says, well, how much money we got? And he says, oh, I got quite a bit. And it says, well, you know, if you know how to find the right people, that money can buy us the muscle that we need. And then we hear the Mandalorian music play just before the episode ends. So a little telltale sign that Din Djarin will be showing up.
I was so sleepy that I didn't pick up on that the first time I saw it. And when my cousin was talking about that the next day, I was just like, how do you know?
Oh, okay.
the Mandalorian is showing up. So I watched it again, and yeah, it is recognizably that theme song, but I would have rather, I think, had the surprise than have them give it away with the theme song.
Yeah, that's true.
But that's just me. I didn't expect to see Mandalorian back, and I will be happy to see him because he is a character that I like, whereas most of these characters are not, and so... we'll see how that goes. Do you think he'll be in like the next three, or is he just going to be, in one, and then he'll show up in the final battle in the last episode?
Yeah, like maybe next episode they'll meet up with him and talk to him and try to persuade him. And he says, well, I don't know. I'll see what I can do. And then maybe he does show up at the very end to help out. But it could be cooler than that, too. It could be, he's in on the plan and he's in there for the next three episodes, too. So. Because like Boba showed up and helped Mandalorian in season two of that show, but he was only in for a couple of episodes and then he was out for the final battle. So I guess it'll be interesting to see how they reciprocate that.
Well, it'll be fun to find out what's been going on with Mandalorian, unless it takes place immediately after the last episode. But, he'll probably ask him about the child. And
he'll have the Darksaber, so that'll be cool.
Oh, I hadn't thought of that. That'll be fun. Yeah, I'm not sure what to look forward to. I hope that the twins, the two Hutts, have formed an alliance with the Pikes.
Oh.
And so there are two whole crime syndicates, somebody that's immensely powerful. And again, that it seems like the odds are stacked against Boba Fett. I would like that, but I don't know what to expect except for two extra episodes somehow. I did like to see Boba Fett's ship again.
Yeah.
It makes a familiar sound, and I liked to see the Sarlacc. But again, I didn't love this episode, and there were a lot of people that said this was great, but I don't feel like it reached the heights of that second episode. That's just me. It could be that once the story is really kicking into gear, that everything is going to fire on all cylinders, and you'll be like, oh, this is what it's been building for. This is great.
This is what we've been building to all along or something, yeah.
But my hopes aren't super high.
Yeah, no, I agree. Episode 2 has been the best episode so far. But I did like 4 quite a bit. It's kind of following the Star Trek pattern of the even ones are the best.
Oh, good point.
But yeah, if we don't see any more mods, that'd be fine with me. Or if a couple of them get scorched or something like that, that'd be even better. So.
Well, there's so many of them. There's at least 4, and I feel like you only need 2.
Yeah.
You always want there to be somebody just to show that there is danger and that, stuff can go wrong. And what I would like is for me to become emotionally invested.
Exactly. Yep.
And want Boba Fett to succeed. And you do that by showing that it's hard, that things are difficult, that he's struggling, that he has to make difficult decisions, and that there is a chance that he will fail. And so far, it's just everything has been so easy for him, except for a couple of moments in the flashbacks. But I hope that it gets hard again.
Yeah, me too. I think you hit it on the nose when you said, we need something to care about. You and I were in a online conversation briefly with Renee Chambliss talking about, we cared for Baby Yoda right away. There is no Baby Yoda in this show. And I don't know if we're ever going to get another Baby Yoda. That was kind of force lightning in a bottle kind of thing. But we do need something to care about. And we don't really have that in the Book of Boba Fett, where the entire time we were with the Mandalorian, we cared about him and the child and, everything that they were trying to do. We need some of that, something to care about in these as well.
yeah, if it were my show, I guess I would make different decisions. I don't dislike Fennec Shand, but they haven't given us a lot of reason to like her either.
A lot of sideline looks. Just that
the actress is likable. What?
A lot of sideline looks at Boba Fett. This is all they've given her to do.
Yeah, I feel like they need to have some kind of conflict between them or some kind of tension, whether it's sexual or whether it's just, you know, philosophical tension. I suppose they could kill her off if they don't have plans for her, but it seems kind of boneheaded to kill her off if there's a chance you could sign Ming-Na Wen to her own show. Because it sure seems like that's what has been happening with these Disney Plus shows, with the Marvel show. And I wouldn't be surprised if we get a Elena Belova show. You know, there's the Ahsoka show, and she was introduced in Mandalorian. And maybe that will set somebody up to have their own show. And it's just natural when you're having these very limited series rather than, oh, somebody, you know, signing up for 3, 4, 5 seasons of something.
Well, and even if they didn't have a Fennec Shand spinoff show, it's wise to keep her around so that she can show up in all these other shows at various times. It's a great character if they would do more for her, you know, development and stuff like that.
That's right. And she showed up on Bad Batch.
She did, yeah.
Which shows that she's been around for a long time, since the rise of the Empire. And so you could fit her in any number of shows, and you know, we could get flashbacks to where she came from as well. But I, like I said, I want there to be conflict, and there just hasn't been enough. Like the deal with the mods, where he just decided to bring them into his inner circle, I would have liked there to be some kind of fight and argument and persuasion and all that. And there wasn't any of that. And so,
yeah.
So we'll see. I have no idea. I mean, it would be neat if in the next episode, he runs into somebody from his past, somebody like Bossk, somebody like IG-88, somebody like Cad Bane, that knows Boba Fett as a bad guy. And it's like, there's Boba Fett, kill. And we can get something like that. But again, your guess is as good as mine where they're going with this.
Yeah, it would be kind of cool to get the band back together, you know, have the whole crew that was there on the Executor, you know, get together for this fight.
Oh, wow. I hadn't even thought of that. But to see Zuckuss and 4LOM and...
Dengar?
Dengar is the least cool of those bounty hunters. But yeah, okay. There are people that like Dengar, I am sure.
He would fit right in place on Tatooine there. Dressed in rags and all.
Yeah.
Well, we should probably close this up.
Yeah, we ought to. It's been fun to talk about. And I'm sorry that I complained so much, but I'm not sorry at the same time. It's just like I feel what I feel. And hopefully the next episode of Delusions of Grandeur will be gushing and me saying, oh, wow, but boy, I was wrong.
Can you believe it? Kind of thing. Yeah, that'd be great. Yeah, and you know, we don't like to be negative, but we have to be honest. We have to say if we don't like something about it. But yeah, we'll see what there is in these next few episodes, and we'll be back here to talk to you about it. Meanwhile, if you want to get a hold of us, you can go to journeyintopodcast@gmail.com. You can also call the voicemail line at 77JINTO107. And you can support the podcast and the Journey Into by going to patreon.com/journeyinto. And if you want to support Rish on his Patreon, you can go to patreon.com/rishoutfield. And Rish currently is doing daily episodes on his Patreon. So that's pretty fun to listen to. So head on over there and support Rish.
Well, thanks, man.
And we'll be back next time to talk about more Book of Boba Fett. So, till next time, Rish.
All right.
Don't work for Scug Holes.
Boy, I have no response to that. So I'll just say, hey, who are you calling a Scug Hole?
All right, good night.
Hey! The Delusions of Grandeur podcast is produced under a Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, No Derivatives license. This means you can share it with anyone, but do not change it or sell it. Many Bothans died to bring us this information.
So episode 3 starts with a flashback, and then it's interrupted by him being attacked by the Wookiee.
Yes, he... we met Kersantan last time, I believe in episode 2, or chapter 2. And he's this really huge, beefy Wookiee. He was working for the Hutts, the twins that we met, as kind of their enforcer kind of thing, so... He's brutally pulled out of his reverie. All the Bacta fluid starts spilling out onto the floor, and Kersantan grabs him and throws him out of the Bacta pod, and they start to fight, but Boba's at a big disadvantage. He's in his tighty-whities and kind of all wet and just waking up and everything. He tries to go over to his armor and get some of his gadgets, but... Oh, actually, we're skipping a part.
Really?
Because the next part is when the mods come in, and we haven't met the mods yet.
Oh, so I remembered it wrong. Okay.
I don't know how much we want to talk about the mods.
That's all I want to talk about.
Okay. Well, I guess to go back a little bit then, we'll...
We could just start over if I've derailed us.
I guess we could. Yeah.
You know, people say, oh, you don't understand Star Wars. Oh, no. Like that, put a tack in that so I can talk about it later. There was a YouTube video that... No, I said I would talk about it later.